All right. I guess that's our cue to start babbling about stuff. I'm Robert from Fish and Franks. I got Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. And RJ, the man, the myth, the man in control, basically, here at WKDW.
Yes, I have access to all the buttons and dials.
Yes. How you guys doing today?
I'm doing good.
Are you cold?
I did just take my jacket off.
Well, that's amazing. I've been thinking about putting a jacket on. Notice I'm wearing flannel today because it went down into the 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty chilly this morning.
Yeah, and then one of our non-native Floridians on staff came in here this morning and turned the air conditioner down to 73.
Why don't you just open the doors?
Well, you know, I don't know. But I'm sitting around at the table and I'm thinking, God, it's cold. Why am I still cold? My hands, I can't feel my fingers. And I looked at the thermostat, 73.
Right. So that's nuts. No. And
that's hot tub weather up in Michigan, you realize. Yeah, 73. It's hot.
So. Exactly. So. You know, that's one of the biggest things that people have a hard time figuring out down here in Florida. Cold is relative to where you are at, not where you're from.
That's right. That's right.
And that's
exactly
a huge
right.
thing with fishing that people just can't comprehend sometimes, because you can always tell when it's cold in Florida with the residents because they're dressed in hoodies.
Yes.
They're got pants
down jackets.
On,
yes.
Pants on. And yeah, we might only wear those things 3 or 4 days out of the year, most of us.
Right.
But it's still... You know who the residents are and who are not.
That's right. And all the people from up north are walking around in shorts and flip-flops. And
yeah. You pull up to the gas pumps and you look at the guy and go, okay, that guy's from somewhere else because he's tank top, shorts, flip-flops.
Not a Floridian.
No, that guy's from Florida for a long time. Look at him. He's got his Nanook for the North outfit on and he's ready to go.
Right. And I can tell when I see the fishing pictures on Facebook, you know, who the native Floridians are. You know, they got gloves on. You know, they're handling fish with gloves, and they got long sleeves. And then you can tell with the captains, too. They're all bundled up, and their clients are all sitting there in shorts. And
mm-hmm. I get made fun of all the time.
Yeah. Well, too bad for that, right? We're going to stay warm the best we can. Yeah.
Well, the funniest part is half of his customers are from up north.
Yes.
And... In the morning, like on a morning like this morning, they show up at the boat ramp. They're going to be in shorts, tank top, and flip-flops. He's like, you guys really need to bring a jacket. You know, it's going to be cold on the water. No, we'll be fine. Well, I've got a spare rain suit, but I'm not giving you mine.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to try that on at least until we get to our spots, because it's going to be cold. No, this is nothing until you do 30 miles an hour across the open harbor. And they're shivering and bundling up and going, do you have an extra jacket? No, I offered it to you. It's back in the truck. You should have brought yours like I told you to.
Right.
You know, and it's amazing how much different it is when you actually get out on the water. And the toughest of the guys from Canada are like, shaking. Well, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, especially you sit them up in the bow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And run them right into the wind, so you double it. So you're doing 30, and the wind's doing 30, so it's 60-mile-an-hour winds blowing across that exposed skin.
Right.
Yep. And the air temperature is 40 degrees, so there you have it.
Now, speaking of that 60-mile-an-hour winds, I mean, 2 days ago, we had pretty much a mini hurricane down in Charlotte Harbor South. I don't know how much of it hit Northport.
No, we got quite a bit of it here. Okay. We had 40-mile, 45-mile-an-hour sustained winds for hours at 40 miles an hour, and an occasional 65-mile-an-hour gusts were recorded here in the area. So
right.
It was a straight-line hurricane. And, you know, we have the software that we look out into the Gulf and we can see which way the winds are blowing. There was actually something spinning out there like a big hurricane.
Yeah.
So it was spinning and it was sending all the wind up just like a hurricane does, only in a straight line.
Yeah. If this would have been September, it would have turned into a hurricane.
It would have been a hurricane. If there was enough heat in the Gulf, it would have done that. Yeah.
If this would have been September, it definitely would have turned into that.
Right. And what we got from the Weather Service is they got fooled. They didn't expect the pressure to drop as far and as fast as it did. And that's why there was hardly any rain.
Right.
Because the pressure dropped so fast, it just blew all that stuff out of the atmosphere and we got wind.
Yeah.
Cold, dry
wind.
Imagine
that.
Fooled me. I always believed those guys, you know. Yeah. I buy insurance from them, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, we supposedly, I mean, the Sunseeker Resort had all sorts of issues of blowing a lot of their construction
There was free lumber on the bridge.
Plywood yeah. for days.
Plywood. Yeah. There was plywood, 2x4s, all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah. If you were quick enough to get there, yep.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. And then supposedly the yacht club registered a gust of 91 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The one right there.
Charlotte County Yacht Club?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I heard is the direction of the wind was coming directly under the bridges, and
yeah.
it turned them into wind tunnels, into wind funnels, I guess. And so on the opposite side of the bridge, you got even faster wind than what the recorded gusts were on the other side of the bridge. I think that's what happened to those two sailboats.
Oh, yeah.
Is they were probably in closer proximity to the bridge, and in that 90-mile-an-hour gust, and some of those sustained winds just turned them right over.
Oh, absolutely. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, it's a weird phenomenon the way it happened because, I mean, it brought almost 3 feet of extra water into the harbor in a period of about 5 hours.
Mm.
You know, usually when a hurricane is coming by, to bring in that much water is usually like a 12-hour event because it's usually moving a lot slower even with those hard winds.
Mm-hmm.
It still takes a lot longer than that. This one pushed in a whole lot of water very, very, very quickly.
Yeah, what I read was when the hurricane comes in, it has a wall of water that it's pushing in front of it, which mm-hmm. actually lowers the surface speed of the wind in front of it. So that wind is going up over the loop that it's making, the lump. And when this happened, it was just straight wind right at the surface. And it was pushing a lot of water up in front of it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it was pretty impressive to see that.
So it was not a day for going offshore, from what I heard. It
wasn't a day to go inshore either.
Right.
The good part about it, though, is like, okay, yes, it was 47 degrees or 46 degrees this morning, pretty much close to the harbor. But that amount of water that got pushed in, being on the backside of the full moon, you know, it's a week past already of the full moon, so we were kind of back to normal tides. But the high water helped kind of insulate it a little bit. So I don't think, and I might be wrong, this is going to be Carl's specialty, but I'm thinking that it's not going to change the fishing significantly to do anything because it's supposed to warm back up by the weekend. You know, basically
not very much.
Not a lot.
No, but we're going to have a lot of sun. And that'll make a difference
of sun
in the
minimal
water
wind.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to start dissipating by Saturday as far as the wind goes. You know, but, I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's going to, like, because prior to this wind, the trout had all slowed down. The sheep's head had really slowed down. They're still doing good, mind you, but not great for this time of year. But we were starting to see tarpon in the pass, like fishable numbers of tarpon in the pass. King mackerel are back in the pass and just off the beaches. Do you think this weather is going to change those fish out there right now? And if you think they're still going to be there, how would you target them?
I'm actually not sure if they're going to be around. I think that this bad wind that we had actually brought them back, you know, inshore, like in closer, especially like the kingfish. I think they actually might push back out once it starts warming back up. But if they don't, you know, for the kingfish, I mean, I'd get out there and just start trolling. I'd troll 2 or 3 rods through the pass and just sit there and keep trolling just on the outside of the pass, and you should get kings. The tarpon, I mean, I'd probably bring some really big, you know, hand picks or selects with you, size shrimp, and I'd fish them in the pass, you know, dropping them down to the bottom. You're going to want to bring a bunch of extra shrimp with you just because where you're at. You're always going to get snapper in there. You might catch a couple small grouper, but you're going to go through a lot of shrimp. So you're going to want to bring quite a few shrimp with you. Pinfish is another thing I'd probably bring. Bring some pinfish with you and fish them towards the bottom too. That should do pretty good for the tarpon.
So you're thinking shrimp and pinfish are going to be your two best things for the tarpon?
For the tarpon, yes.
Would you try any artificials on them?
I mean, it's kind of hard throwing artificial that deep.
Right.
Because like a bait buster, it's going to take forever to get down to that depth where those fish are sitting. That's the only downfall with the artificial. But, I mean, you could try. Like, sometimes them fish are going to push up on the edges, you know, on the sides of the pass where it is a little shallower off them sandbars, and I could see a bait buster working there. Or, you know, a spool tech maybe working.
What would you think about, like, a vertical jig? Like what they use for grouper and amberjack and stuff like that out on the reefs.
Never tried it.
That used to be very popular in the past, was jigging for tarpon.
Yeah, but that was a completely different type of jig. It was actually a round ball.
Yes.
With a tail attached to it. But the you familiar with the vertical jigs that they do for the grouper fishing? Basically, it's a fancy diamond jig from up north.
Yeah.
Just a fancy diamond jig. That's all it really is. But the reason why I ask is because just before this hit, was it Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
It's either Saturday or Sunday. Customer was in, and he hooked 4 fish on a vertical jig. Got one to the boat.
Like, I could maybe see in a buck, like a bucktail jig with, like, a paddle tail or a curly tail off of it. Okay. Maybe working a little better than a vertical jig.
Right.
But I don't, I mean, they work for grouper and all that stuff, so why wouldn't they work for a tarpon in deep water like that?
What do you think, RJ?
I'd go with that. I would say if you're going to do artificials, that's the way to do it. You're going to have to jig down that deep because there's really no other action you can add to the lure.
You know, right.
There's no way you're going to get it to go horizontally in any direction, so you're going to bounce it up and down.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll bounce it into a midst of a tarpon pod and you'll get something, but
The only thing I'm thinking is like, how many lures do we use for different applications? Okay, it wasn't really made for that, but we're going to try it this way.
There's a lot.
You know? I mean, there's a lot of different lures that we're constantly experimenting with and rigging them differently. Like, you know, a curl tail grub is made to pretty much be fished with a jig head. That's pretty much how everyone fishes them. But for trout, there's times where we set up basically like a Carolina rig, and that means your egg sinker is on your main fishing line, then a swivel, and then like 2 feet of leader, and then we're running like an offset worm hook into that curl tail and just slightly bouncing it along so that way the sinker is down inside the grass a little bit, but your curl tail is kind of suspended up above that grass as you're working it along. Completely different way of fishing that lure. So who's to say that you couldn't take that vertical jig and while you're doing a controlled drift in the pass, because you never want to anchor there, and if you just try to drift, you're going to go through it 4 to 6 miles an hour, which is what the current is there. So if you're doing a controlled drift where you're bumping the motor in and out of gear to slow your speed down as you're going in or out with the flow, why couldn't you use a vertical jig not quite the same way you would with grouper where you're just fishing it completely vertical? But yet, that thing still cuts through the water pretty well, and you might be dragging it, almost borderline trolling it, vertical jigging at the same time.
That makes sense.
Just a thought, because, I mean, and this guy think, got 4, and I don't know what he was doing or how he was doing it because he didn't really explain anything other than he thought it was just dumb luck because he saw the fish on the bottom machine and sent it down.
Well, and that's two important points. Number one is the bottom, and the bottom in that area is going to be sandy, right?
Pretty much. No, the pass is really, really structured.
Hang up a few drag bottom there.
Well, yeah. There's palm trees, sandy rock, all kinds of stuff.
But
no grass down that deep. Yeah, so you're going to have a lot of areas to bounce that thing up and on and off and all the rest of that. And the second thing is, if you're not using a bottom machine and you're not looking for them, you're probably not going to get anything, any kind of hookup. It'd be pure luck that you go over a pod.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing is check the area out and see what you can find and then try these different techniques. But I think you're right. You're going to see that jig bounce on the bottom, come up, and move at about 2-3 miles an hour because you're going to get some lag as the boat goes a little faster than the drift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to drop back down to the bottom and come back up again. So that's some pretty good action you're going to get with that jig.
It could be mimicking a squirrel fish.
Yes.
Coming up, eating, and trying to get back to the bottom, or a pinfish it could mimic.
Right.
So I could see it working.
Just one of those curiosities of, hey, never know. I mean, it's at least worth a try. You know, try something a little different that not you would not normally think of. I mean,
now, at this time of year, we don't see tarpon up towards the surface very much, do we? Hardly ever come up to the top.
Too much oxygen, a lot more oxygen in the water, so they don't have to. But the only thing is, I could see a downfall with that is, like, if there is a big pot of tarpon underneath you and you're sitting there doing that vertical jig, you do have a chance of snagging.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
It's the only downfall I could see about that.
Yeah.
And if you snag one of them, good luck.
No, that's true, too. You know, there's something to be said for that. But it's just, it's something that's unusual and different, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And those vertical jigs, the true vertical jigs, aren't a treble-hooked lure anyway. They've got a single hook on them or two single hooks on them. So I think you're less likely to snag them with that single hook than you would be with, say, an old-school diamond jig that has a treble hook on it.
Yep.
Plus, a lot of the guys, the veterans, and I'm sure you might have done this, RJ, a lot of those guys with diamond jigs up north took the treble hooks off and put a single hook on them.
Yeah, every diamond jig I've ever worked with, I've always taken the treble off and putting a single on it.
And
usually a little bit bigger than what the treble hook would have been.
Right. So. Now, did you find it to be a better for the hookups or just for the action of the lure?
I think hookups were better, and I think also unhooking was better.
If
you're going to release a fish, that treble hook, is, especially when they've been nailed by a jig, they usually get it in the upper jaw. The upper mouth, not the upper jaw. And it's difficult to get a treble back out of there, especially when you're dealing with a striper that's 20 pounds. You know, it doesn't want to come on the boat with you, that sort of thing. So I always – the action in the lure, I don't think it changes that much. Right. But also snagability, like you said, with a single hook, you're not snagging things on the bottom. You're not pulling kelp along with you, that sort of thing. So,
right. No, and I agree with you. I think a single hook on most lures of any kind, whether it's a spoon or a jig, I mean, the only exception to that would be some hard baits. But having that single hook, I tend to keep more fish on the hook landed with a single hook than I do a treble. And you would think it would be the complete opposite because, they all of a sudden got six hooks stuck in their face, but yet they still get off.
Right.
I've never really understood that.
I don't know if the trebles dig as deep when that happens.
I think
happens.
It's a different gap in the treble hook versus single hook.
Right. I don't think it digs as deep.
I think you're actually allowed to get that single hook in the mouth better.
Okay. Yeah. And I can see that.
Now, I know a lot of people are concerned about how is it going to change the action in a lure, especially a lure that's got two treble hooks on it. And I knew one guy, he actually used to weigh the treble hook on a little scale. He was using the scale for other things, but he would weigh the treble hook, and then he would pull out a single hook and get one that was real close in weight, because he believed it was the weight that made the difference and not the drag of the treble hook in the water. So, and he was always very successful in fishing. So, but all of his Rapalas and everything else, none of them had treble hooks on. They all had single hooks.
Right. Well, nowadays they make inline hooks that are real easy to switch out on a lot of your lures. But I think one of the things that Frank discovered a few years ago, was when you're replacing that single, and they call them inline hooks, you're replacing that single inline hook with a treble hook. When you hold out your hand, you get your treble hook is going to be three prongs. And a lot of people want to change the single hook out to just the single point of a treble hook. And Frank found that doing it across two points. So if the gap of your single hook is the same as the gap of two of your points on your treble hook, you get a much more similar action out of that lure. And then there's certain lures where you can't change that middle hook. You got to leave that middle treble hook on because that middle treble hook on a lot of lures acts as a keel. Mm. You know, it's hydrodynamically designed to have those hooks ride up to its belly and get that lure to function properly. So some lures, You got to kind of play with it and experiment with it. But certain models of lures work better where you just change out the back treble hook and leave the center treble hook on, but just flatten out the barbs on it, and then it's much easier to get out of your hand or out of the fish's face.
It's never fun when you're connected to the hook and the fish at the same time.
Right. Never find that happen, right?
So, no, I don't want that experience.
I've seen, not to me, but I've seen it happen to quite a few of my buddies. And
what about a single hook attached to a tarpon?
I've seen that happen, too.
Yeah.
Somebody right next to me on another boat by themselves.
Yeah, it's one like of our friends.
You got to pay attention. Oh, and that's even worse.
Yeah.
About 140-pound tarpon, and he was connected. The hook was through his thumb, and it was still in the fish. Oof.
Yeah, it was a bad situation that could have went real bad real quick.
He still
quick.
Can't move his thumb right.
It's just dangerous. That's why we always say it's just there's certain species that you should never fish with by yourself, tarpon being one of them.
Yes.
I mean, they could be so, I mean, when you grab them on the side of the boat, I've seen, I mean, they've headbutted me before multiple times. What happens if you get knocked out and you're by yourself and you go in the water?
Right. The day is done.
There's a lot more than just the day is done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
nobody ever wears their life jackets out there. Whether they're with friends or by themselves, almost nobody wears a life jacket out there. So it's like if you're reaching down for one of those fish and a head butts you and knocks you out and you fall out of the boat, you're crab food.
Yep.
More than likely.
Yeah. Now, you know, for those people that don't want the stigma of wearing a life jacket, I never got that. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of vests that you can buy that look really cool. You know, doesn't look like a life jacket. And there's also those self-inflating things that you clip onto your belt, and that'll hold you up over the water, and it self-inflates when it gets submerged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a bunch of ways to do this, and going naked is not, you know, and by naked I mean with no flotation at all, is not the way to go, especially in places like the pass, where within just a few minutes you're out in the Gulf if you went overboard in the pass.
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah, that would not be good. So you got all your Christmas shopping done?
Yeah, of course. Of course I do.
But... Sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're all guys here. How about you, Carl?
Nope.
Not even close?
Yeah, no, I just got my dog to do.
It's not
a dog?
Yeah, I just got my dog. I got to buy him presents. He likes, he pins the presents down and he rips the paper off.
And nice.
He likes opening presents, so.
Yeah, well, you know, us guys, we know it's not Christmas Eve yet, so we're not done.
Right. True. Well, we got a lot of people in the shop right now doing a lot of Christmas shopping. I know there's some anglers out there that are trying to give their spouses or family members ideas for gifts, and there's a couple things that I think that are like really pretty good that are easy. I mean, the obvious one is a gift certificate from one of your local favorite, preferably a local tackle shop and not a box store.
Right, exactly right.
That's one way you really can't go wrong.
By whose eyes? You get your wife or a girlfriend a gift certificate, you're probably going to be in a doghouse.
Unless she fishes.
Well,
if she fishes and you get her a gift certificate to a tackle shop.
I don't know about that one, Robert.
My girl fishes. She'd be happy with a gift certificate from Frank's, even though she works there.
Okay.
But here's the other thing. If you've got an angler and you don't want to get just a gift certificate and have it be just blanket and not as personable, there's a few things that you can get them that makes it super easy. What's an essential that you always have to have in your tackle box?
Pliers.
Okay, pliers. And pliers sink. They fall out of people's hands. They rust. So having a spare pair of pliers is never a bad thing.
Right.
How about you, RJ? What's another thing that's kind of a staple?
Fillet knife.
Okay, fillet knife's another one. They sink, most of them.
Most of them sink. Blades and even break. The ones that float get away.
Yeah, blades break. So that's another one. Now you can go down even smaller, like split shots. We always use split shots.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's a good little stocking stuffer that's an essential.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that he's got 10 packs of them. In a month, he's going to have zero packs because it's one of those things like, oh, yeah, I've got enough split shots to last me a while. And next thing you know, you go, oh, crap, I'm out. You know, that's one.
Well, yeah, I think you got to look at it, too, is what would your favorite angler not buy for himself? you know, what extra thing that he might like or she might like that they're probably not going to buy for themselves. And that's one of the ways to look through it, you know.
It is, but it can sometimes be difficult because if you're coming in shopping for – and I'm going to use Frank's for an example because it's the only one I've got to go by because there's other tackle shops that are great people, but I don't know how they deal with their customers or anything like that. Somebody comes in and wants to buy their spouse or family member a reel because they know that – oh, they'll never spend more than $40 on a reel, so I want to buy them something nice. I'm going to get them a $100 reel. Well, what kind of fishing do they do? I don't know.
Yeah, there you have it.
They go fishing all the time, but you don't know if they fish inshore, offshore, freshwater, saltwater. Some of their family or spouses don't know the specifics of it. So there's certain items. It's like, okay, do you know if the reel's small or big? You know, so it gets to be a little tricky sometimes to get those kind of gifts.
Well, what I would suggest is a gift certificate to a marriage counselor. Because you're obviously not paying attention.
Yeah, but can you tell me if your spouse has whatever brand name purse?
Yeah, no idea.
Exactly. So it kind of goes both ways, you know, and I'm being very stereotypical here, but it's true. Do you know your spouse's favorite brand of shoes or favorite perfume? No. Don't pay attention. I know I like how this one smells. I know that I don't like how that one smells. That much I can tell you. You know, so.
And for me, it's do they have it at the dollar store or not?
There you go. But buying some of those gifts are a little bit more personable where you have to know a little bit more detail. So it can be a little tricky. And it's still awesome because we still sell people those reels. And we just tell them, hey, if it's the wrong one, they can always bring it back and we can find them the right one. But at least you gave them something that is awesome.
Yeah.
That works easy. But usually I tell people, like, there's essentials. You know, the pliers is one. Fillet knife is another one. Split shots is another one. Fluorocarbon leader or monofilament leader is another essential that you can never have enough of. Hooks is another one. Lures is another good one because it doesn't matter if they fish freshwater or saltwater. You really don't need to know. But the person at that tackle shop, especially our shop, will say, well, here's a really good lure. They'll enjoy this. And they may never have tried that lure. That's the cool part about buying some of the lures is that that's something that they might not have bought for themselves because they don't think about it because they always use the same old, same old. It's like they always throw a Johnson Sprite spoon. That's his only go-to lure. So he doesn't think about other lures, even though he's read about it 100 times or people have talked to him 100 times about it. He's just stubborn and bullheaded because that's how most men are. So by buying them a lure that might be a little outside of their comfort zone or outside of the box, and they're going to go, well, I've thought about these because everyone's told me about it, but I never tried one. So, oh, this is going to be a good gift for me to try out. I'm either going to love it or I'm going to hate it, but I'm going to at least try it. You know, and those kind of things work
pretty
good.
And then some of the unusual stuff that you don't normally buy or know about. Gulp, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a lot of people even know what gulp is. Scent attractants, you know, a lot of people have never tried them before. If you buy somebody something like that, they'll try it and see what happens.
Boomerang cutters.
Yeah, the braid cutters. Those braid are cutters, awesome thing.
Yes.
You know, that's one of the nicest gadgets I've ever seen invented in 10 years.
Oh, they're great.
I mean, they cut braided line, they cut monofilament line. Doesn't matter. You know, it won't cut steel.
Yeah,
it
beats the old nail clippers, huh?
Yeah. Nail clippers don't work very well on braid line. You're better off using a beaver.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I found that out the hard way, pulling out the trusty nail clippers to cut my first braid line. It's like, wait, I'm only smushing it. What's going on here?
Works great on mono or fluorocarbon.
Yeah, it does, but not on braid.
Nope. So, yeah. But those line cutters from Boomerang, I think that's the company, right?
Uh-huh.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think is fishing clothes. Mm-hmm. Is a lot of guys just won't go out and buy, you know, something nice. And you get your spouse to go and buy a nice shirt, you know, that's a fishing style shirt or an art shirt or a T-shirt, something like that. All that stuff is available, hats and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So. And it goes for the guys buying for the girls too. You know, there's just a lot of cool stuff that you can buy that you don't necessarily fish with, but you're going to wear because you fish.
Yeah, or you're just into the outdoor activities in general.
Right. That's right.
You know, the fishing pants that a lot of people wear that are the wick-away type materials.
Yes.
Those are awesome for hiking, camping, fishing, whatever, anything outdoors, because they pull the moisture away from you and keep you feeling more comfortable in general. Same way with a lot of these wick-away shirts that are out there now.
Yeah.
They're amazing for that. But the other thing with those wick-away shirts is they do two things. One, they're comfortable to wear when it's hot out, except for with a handful of people, Frank.
Who will rip the sleeves off? Buy a $100 shirt and rip the sleeves off.
Oh, Frank?
Yeah.
But the thing that they do really good for is as an undershirt, too.
Yes.
Because the purpose of those wick-away shirts is that it pulls the moisture away from your skin and evaporates quicker. So having it as an undershirt can actually keep you a little bit more insulated under a regular T-shirt or whatever other shirt you happen to be wearing that day.
And what we're trying to say, boys and girls, is that there is no excuse on this earth where you should not be buying some kind of outdoor fishing stuff for your significant other, because there's plenty of stuff to choose from. And it doesn't matter what tackle shop you go to, you're going to find something.
Absolutely. And hopefully some helpful people to take care of you.
Yeah, yeah.
So on to the fishing part of it, Carl. I know you've got several charters coming up this week. What is your game plan or species of choice that you think is going to be good? Because there's a lot of people in town visiting. And I think if you can go into some good detail of some areas where you would suggest looking and how you would do it, be good.
I mean, well, I'm going to target redfish. I have a feeling that there are all these big redfish that were in, they pushed out with the mullet when they went to go spawn. So I'm going to be targeting these big redfish, but it's not going to be very easy for a lot of people, I would say. I mean, the trout fishing, the sheep's head fishing, I got four messages today, and I know two people that limited out on sheep's head today. So this cold weather might have helped bring them, fire them back up and bring them in.
Kickstarted them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a bunch of pictures from people that they caught all their limits today. You know, in past few days out in Boca, like Posita area, the trout fishing has gotten a little better. You know, any grass flat, like out in front of Whitting Creek from 3 to 5 feet of water. It seems like your bigger trout, like the, we call gator trout down here, are sitting a lot shallower. Seems like they're sitting in that, like that foot of water. You know, a paddle tail under a float or a live shrimp under a float will work just fine. I prefer the paddle tails because, you know, I cover a lot more water and I could fish them and catch, you know, multiple fish off of one plastic versus a live shrimp, which they will work. But only downfall with the soft plastic is your puffer fish. We have a lot of puffer fish down here. And you'll know when you find a puffer fish because they will take your tail right off of your soft plastic. You know, this, I don't know if this cold weather is going to push our cobia back out, but our cobia came back in when it warmed up. They came in, you know, the Alligator Creek Reef really good, and there's a bunch running down, up and down the sandbars.
Quite a few pictures of people catching cobia, and every now and then you see a keeper.
Yeah, I have a feeling that this cold weather is going to push them back offshore. But people have been just trolling regular DOA paddle tails or, you know, on the sandbars. And then in the deeper water, people are using like a buck jig, and they're putting like a curly tail on it, and they're vertical jigging, you know, over like the Alligator Creek Reef. Cause you don't want to cast it out there because there's so much concrete rubble there. If you cast it out, by the time you bring it back to the boat, it's dropping too deep and you're just going to hang up and you're going to lose a lot of tackle. So, like, especially in that area, vertical, bouncing it vertically is going to be your best bet for not losing so much, you know, hooks and jigs.
Right, and also with cobia fishing like that, you probably don't need to go and bounce off the bottom. You can get down to mid-depth, three-quarter depth, and move it up and down in that area because that's the layer that they're going to be moving back and forth in when they're down deep.
Yeah, they're not, I mean, necessarily they're not going to be all the way on the bottom, but sometimes they will be pretty close, like right above the structure. So, I mean, that's where all their food's going to be hanging out, is in the structure. So, sometimes you do got to get pretty close to the bottom, you know, for them. And then other times they'll be right up on the surface where you could free line a live shrimp at them, or, you know, grab your a plastic, soft plastic paddle tail or a fake shrimp. I love it when they're in the shallow water, like on the bars, though, because you can actually sight fish them.
Yeah.
You could get on the bar, like outside of the bar, 3 to 5 feet of water, use your trolling motor, or you could just idle down the bar. When you, because I've said this to customers before, it's like, when you see a shark, let me know. Because a lot, 90% of the time, people see these fish in the shallow water, and they're like, oh, there's a shark. And majority of the times, it's not going to be a shark. You know, sometimes it'll be like a bonnethead or a little black tip or a little bull, but good chances are it's going to be a cobia sitting there swimming on the outside of that bar. And you could literally sight fish them. Throw, my favorite thing is a live shrimp, a select or a handpick, free line it right at them. They love shrimp in that shallow water.
Basically, a big enough shrimp that's easy to cast.
Yeah, because you're free lining, so you do need a little bit of, you know, weight from that shrimp.
Right,
and you don't want it going to the bottom with the weight. So
right, and as Carl and Frank have taught us, you should always have one rod ready to go, free lined, because you don't know what you're going to see. You know, you're fishing a particular way, and you got everything rigged up that way, and then you spot this big cobia sliding along the side of the boat, and everything you've got is for bottom fishing. So you should always have that one rod ready to go. Happens every time, doesn't it, Carl?
You'll see something different every time, and you won't expect it either.
That's
right.
You'll
be sitting there fishing for redfish. Next thing you know, you look over the other side of the boat. I mean, I've had this happen to me. You see an 8-9 foot sawfish swimming underneath it.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty neat.
Rare, but...
Oh, yeah, it is very rare, but you just never know what you're going to see on the water.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of that, how clear is the water really out there right now?
Not right now.
Well, not right now, but very prior to this blow...
It was bathtub water. With all that wind we had, because I was test driving the boat yesterday, that water is turned up very, very bad.
Right.
I mean, I was in a foot of water yesterday, and I could not see the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, we had 14-foot waves offshore, according to the buoys, and we had some pretty big waves along Inglewood Beach and Casperson and places like that. You know, the wind surfers and the surfer guides were all excited. They all went out. They all froze to death, so there's not too many of them left. But it stirred up a huge amount of sand came off the beaches. You know, a lot of this renourishment stuff, they've lost a whole bunch after the event the other day.
Really?
So,
well, Little Gasparilla Pass?
Yeah.
Totally different. And this was before the blow.
Yeah.
All that sand that built up on the south side of Little Gasparilla Pass, you know, that big sandbar, it majority of it's gone. Majority of it slid straight out, so you cannot run straight out from Little Gasparilla Pass no more. You will be on bottom. I mean, I bumped the first time, it was a couple few weeks ago, first time like when I actually noticed it, I bumped going straight out the way I normally go. You have to come out and run south now to get out. So all that beach restoration is really getting pushed around and changing a lot of stuff near your passes. So you want to be extremely careful. Especially going out of Little Gasparilla Pass now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more dangerous ones to go out of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't go by the charts. Pay attention, because a lot has changed, and the charts are going to take a while to catch up to that.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I noticed it, I mean, I was running out, and it was a foggy day that day. Like, you couldn't see 5 feet past the trolling motor, and I'm looking at my unit, and I'm like, how come I don't see these little round like circles on my unit no more? They were marking the sand humps going out, and I was like, something ain't right. So I actually slowed down at that time, and good thing I did, because my unit actually updated, which really surprised me that how it changed like that to what was going on. That blew my mind.
Yeah, Gasparilla Pass is definitely one of those you really need to be vigilant with, paying attention with what's going on there. You can't just go you know, just go out there blind. It's going to be it's pretty sketchy nowadays. And depending on the size of the boat, there's a lot of boats that still can't even get through there now with the high tide.
Oh, no.
Because it's gotten so shallow through there. And that's hard for people to understand when they come down here because they see a big boat coming in through there, going out through there, and it's like, hopefully you watched his crumb trail that he just followed back in or followed back out, because you notice he didn't go straight out the pass the way it looks. When you're physically looking at it from the boat view, you're not going straight out. You're actually going pretty much south-southwest to get out of that pass. Yep. You'd swear you're going to hit the beach almost because you're quartering towards that more than anything else. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, the storms really change, especially, you know, areas that do that beach restoration. Because that's just loose sand sitting there. And you get a good storm, and it's going to pick that sand up and move it with the current and waves.
Right, and a lot of that stuff is coming down from, like, Siesta Key and places like that where they do a lot of sand transport onto the beaches. And the sand doesn't stay there, so what do? They add more sand. And it doesn't stay there.
And where's it all going?
It's all coming here because the current's going from north to south, so it ends up blocking the other passes as you get further south.
So I was looking at the forecast for the next week, and yes, it's going to hit the 80s by the weekend.
What? It changed?
Yeah.
Oh, I looked earlier. It didn't say no 80s.
Saturday, it's like 83, I think, and stays that way for the rest of the week in the 80s. Daytime high, nighttime high in the 60s, low 60s, kind of almost like our normal wintertime pattern, but still a little warmer, because we should be closer to about 80 degrees for the high. What do you got? Saying something totally different?
Way different. The weather guys for you.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. One website to another.
Friday, I have a high of 72. Saturday, I have a high of 73. Sunday, 73. Monday, 73.
The big deal is going to be cloud cover. And if those are bright, sunny days, and
it'll get warmer.
The water's going to get warmer.
Yeah.
So yes. The air may not get.
I was looking in Boca Grande.
It's even changed more since I looked at it.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of in between where I was at before and where you're at. But the wind is going to lay down, and it's still going to be basically about 80 degrees for the next basically a week.
Yeah.
Don't know if there's more fronts coming in that are going to cause more wind. But we're going to have at least a stable weather pattern over the next several days, getting a little bit better. So
water will clean up.
For a lot of your guests that are down, family members, stuff like that, they're going to have a lot of opportunities to fish inshore and even probably some nearshore reefs or offshore fishing, because red grouper is still closed. Lane snapper is still closed until January 1st. Then it all starts to open up again, and that'll be much better for people to go out offshore fishing. But with the potential of king mackerel being around, cobia being around, if I was going out offshore, even to the nearshore reefs right now, I'm going to be fishing for groceries like little snappers, grunts, porgies, sheep's head, possible flounder, fishing on all those reefs for all of that. But I'm darn sure going to have one big pole free lined out the back because of the possibility of a cobia or a king mackerel coming by. And I might even troll a lure going from one spot to the next with a king mackerel lure. I'm going to put out like a depth-specific lure like a Rapala 30 or a 25, something that dives down about 20 to 30 feet into the water column as I'm going from point A to point B, only trolling at about 3 to 5 miles an hour, seeing what I can find. And I'm also going to try in that process of trolling from one spot to the next, try to find a crab trap line to semi-follow. Because they're usually around kind of some kind of structure that's going to hold bait, that's going to hold bigger predators. So I'll try to follow some of those buoys on my way out from one spot to the next.
What would be your bait of choice to have freelined out the back of the boat, like if you're anchored up fishing?
Well, I'd probably try to catch a pinfish or a squirrelfish on my way out. If it's a squirrelfish or a pinfish, I'm going to put them under a bobber.
See, I like using those spot tails.
Sure, but I'm still going to put those under a bobber too. Because all three of those fish are bottom dwellers, and when you put a hook in them, they're going to want to go right to the bottom. So I'm going to put a bobber out there and set them at about 3 feet and just let them kind of hold their own way up high in the water column.
Yeah, they'll spend that whole time trying to swim down, making all kinds of vibration and stuff in the water. So that's a good way to keep that bait active.
But would you put it on steel or?
Yeah. I would probably do it on steel. I'd probably do a 6 inches of steel leader or 12 inches of steel leader because Barracuda, King Mackerel are all a possibility. Cobia, not going to chew through it, you know, if I was using mono leader. But when you're just kind of freestanding like that, swimming around, steel's much better. If you're trolling it, I would probably be trolling monofilament rather than, you know, I'd be trolling like 80-pound monofilament. Because King Mackerel generally bite the tails off of any bait, and then they circle back around and get a, you know, the basic of their move, they're removing the motor off the fish. So it's immobilized at that point. Then they swing back around and grab the rest of the fish. So under a bobber, it's not uncommon for them to hit the whole thing because he's sitting fairly stationary, swimming in a circle. But on a trolling object, he's going to hit it from behind and just cut the back half off. So I have a, less of a chance getting bit off that way. So I'm going to mix it up a little bit. But inshore, there's not a, as many toothy critters. So mostly what I'm going to stick with is mono leader. And even if I'm going after bonnet head sharks, I'm going to use a monofilament leader more than likely. Yeah. If I've got kids that I want to impress and make sure that they're going to actually land 100% of the shark, I'm going to use just one of those AFW steel snailed hooks, which technically is legal.
Yeah.
Because the way it specifies for the regulations of shark fishing, it's a 3 feet leader or longer that you have to start using circle hooks on. So that little AFW American Fishing Wire makes this really cool little snelled steel leader hook, and it's a long shank hook. So flattening the barb out on it, it's super easy to get out of bonnet head sharks. That's and that allows the kid to get a great picture with a bonnet head shark. And when they go back north, and that little 3 foot shark is probably going to be 6 foot by the time they get home and back to school. You know, it'll be an awesome thing to do. And there's a lot of bonnet heads out there right now.
Yeah, there's quite a few I've heard.
I mean, fishing, I mean, where would be your favorite spot to go look for bonnet heads?
Probably Cape Hayes.
Yeah?
Yep.
And how would you fish for them there?
I'd anchor up and I'd pretty much just sit there and get a couple bags of frozen shrimp. And I'd start breaking shrimp up and just tossing them in the water or have a little chum bag with shrimp hanging there. And then I just have, you know, one or two rods out on a float. And before they changed the rule on the shark fishing, I mean, I like using those long shank hooks.
Right.
Because it, the bonnet heads, they wouldn't, you know, cut through with a long shank hook as easy.
Right.
But now you can. You got to use that inline circle hook.
And obviously shrimp is one of the best baits for those bonnet head sharks because they're not like a normal shark. How about you, RJ? Where would be one of your
Turtle spot? Bay.
Yeah?
Turtle Bay, looking for them there.
So you're going to look for them kind of drifting over the flats, almost like you're trout fishing?
Well, you might pick up some trout also.
There you go.
So
and that's an awesome way to do it. That's actually one of my more favorite ways to do it.
And it's all shrimp-based at that point. You know, you're going to get your trout on shrimp. You're going to get your bonnet head on shrimp. So you're going to get one or the other drifting over the flats there.
Right. And this time of year, you never know what you're going to get. Like Cape Hayes, and I know Turtle Bay, Pompano have been coming through sporadically. You never know when there's going to be an oddball redfish or a snook popping up out there, even though it's out in the way open water.
Cobia.
Cobia is another one that could very likely pop up out there.
Yeah.
And it's great because, you know, like you guys said, shrimp. You know, shrimp is the easiest bait there is for bonnet head sharks.
Yeah, like I'd bring a couple bags of frozen shrimp and I'd just put scent in the water.
Yeah.
And that will bring them to you.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And the other thing is, like when you were saying you drift and you've got a chum bag out, bonnet heads aren't a schooling fish like a lot of fish, but usually when you find one, you start to find several. They're kind of semi-communal fish, I guess. Usually if you find one, you usually find maybe a half a dozen in an area. That area might be the size of a football field, but I'd rather find that one little football field and all that acreage out there than having to try to guess where they might be. So it's nice to do that drifting and your chum. So I would incorporate personally, I would do RJ's technique with drifting around with your technique with maybe using the shrimp as chum, putting them in a little, you know, frozen shrimp in a little cheesecloth bag or something over the side to add scent to the water while looking for them and hoping that they'll pop up. Either I'll see them or they'll follow that scent back towards me.
Because, I mean, like, I've sat there, like, with Cape Hayes and done it, and especially this time of year, trying for those bonnet heads, while you've got that shrimp in the water, you're putting that scent out. You know, I brought pompano to the boat. I brought all types of stuff to the boat by doing that.
That's pretty awesome. I like that. And pompano are another thing that's starting to show up.
Yes.
You know, what they were just starting to show up, started to warm up. And even though they should be here in the colder water, that whole last week when it was pretty warm out, starting to get a lot of mixed reports of pompano out there.
Right.
And that's, you know.
Pretty good size ones, too.
Yeah. And a lot of people are catching them right along the beaches.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is a really good time of year if you don't have a boat and you got people coming down and you get a couple of inexpensive rods and go walk the beach. And you're going to see all kinds of cool stuff right now. That water should clear up in the next day or two, and it'd be nice and gin clear again. And there's all kinds of cool stuff on the beach right now. I mean, everything from flounder to redfish to snook, they're all going to be moving along those sandbars and cuts and things like that. So Casperson, Inglewood Beach, all of those places are great places to go if you don't have a boat but you want to take the clan fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, Casperson's beach would be...
Especially if you have wives and kids. I mean, the wives most of the time don't want to fish. They'd much rather sit there and lay in the, you know, on a towel and get sun.
Yeah.
So you could fish, make the wife happy.
You take everybody for a day at the beach, you know, pack a lunch, and the kids can walk the beach flinging shrimp out there, or even artificials work really well off the beach.
Yeah, those little silly jigs, the little banana jigs are amazing out there. So it's pretty good stuff. So you got a lot of options out there with the holidays coming up. Do some beach fishing and enjoy yourself out there. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and take your time and be safe. Consider safety a little bit. You got kids and stuff that may not know what they're doing, and you got to kind of hover over it all and keep an eye on it, especially if you know what you're doing.
Right.
And then just have a good time. Don't be pressured about it.
Absolutely.
A day getting skunked on the beach beats any other day on shore, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but okay.
You know, one thing I'm surprised that we haven't seen or heard of coming back in is the mackerel.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Spanish mackerel didn't show up the way they...
The kings are
warm,
starting to come
as
back.
As warm as it got, you figured the Spanish mackerel would have came in. So I know it's winding down and we're getting close to the end, so I just wanted to tell everybody... Merry Christmas from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for supporting us and all the small business around us. Merry Christmas to the RJ at WKDW for allowing us to run our mouths here. And Captain Carl KB, Backcountry Charters, available for charters on your boat or their boat. Why don't you give them your phone number, Carl, so they can get a hold of you if they'd like.
941-565-7325.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, folks. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.